This is Daniel Cerrone, writer of Episode 801, Roanoke. You're listening to The Blacklist Exposed on Golden Spiral Media.
Is that a gun in your blazer? Or are you just happy The Blacklist is back? Which means so are we! Welcome, everyone, to the award-winning The Blacklist Exposed podcast. I'm Agent Troy Heinrichs.
Dum-dum. And I'm Agent Aaron Peterson. And I don't know about you guys, but The Blacklist reminds me of that girl I kept chasing in high school. You know, every time I start thinking, I'm getting a signal. I think she's interested. I think I'm getting somewhere with her. I find out how wrong I am, and I spend my night alone writing love letters on the internet. Thanks for joining us yet again for number 139 on The Blacklist, Roanoke, written by Daniel Cerrone and directed by Mr. Andrew McCarthy. Show notes and other intel for this episode of The Blacklist Exposed can be found at theblacklistexposed.com. I'm so happy to be back. It's been back. Be back in black.
I was actually kind of disappointed because when I got the initial write-up for this episode, it just said Roanoke, and I was like, oh yeah, no numbered episode off the get-go. And then, unfortunately, there actually was a number in the title card, and then I was kind of like, aw.
Yeah, and we should clarify, for people that are wondering, these first three episodes, it was confirmed by John Bokenkamp in an Entertainment Weekly or TV Line somewhere, that these are the three episodes that were supposed to be the season final three episodes from last year that they've reworked to work for this opening of the season. So I would guess, based on the, I mean, I know what the title is for the second episode, so I'm expecting some big stuff there, but I would guess episode three would kind of be a turning of a sort, just based on that information. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like the end of it.
Which is interesting because knowing who the title of episode number two is, You would think that that would have been the season finale. So I'm wondering if they scrunched three episodes into two episodes, given where they left off with 719. And then the third episode ends up becoming like a, what would have been like the season premiere kickoff.
Well, he said these first three are basically the what would have been the final three. So I would, maybe that's how they were going to play it out.
Maybe.
Let's see how it plays out. We don't know how the, let's stick with this episode. We'll take it one episode at a time.
Well, there's a thing called the pandemic that's still going on since we last left you all back in May. And it's still raging. So a lot of people, Aaron, have found the Blacklist during the pandemic in their stay-at-home orders and binge the crap out of it on Netflix.
Top 10 in October.
It was. And I think that there might be some new people joining the show. So I thought maybe to start out, since we don't have what would typically be our profiling question of the week at this point of the episode, maybe a little bit about yourself. You know, what brought you to the Blacklist originally back in 2013? And then which theory camp you are currently a member of? So that the audience gets to know you a little bit better.
Oh, we're like reintroducing ourselves. All right. Well, long timers, skip ahead. Let's see. What brought me to the podcast or the show?
To the show, to the Blacklist.
Okay. To the Blacklist.
I brought Aaron to the show, literally dragging, kicking and screaming, threatening to cut his tongue out.
That's true. I think there's begging involved. There's dinner and there's definitely a bottle of red wine. See that happen. I would say it was James Spader because I love James Spader from so many other things. And even though I wasn't a huge, like, I'm not a big comedy guy. I really prefer dramas, thrillers, stuff where people are just dying left and right. And this seemed like right up my alley. So that's what brought me to it first and foremost. Spader, I'm not big on long-term episodic TV, but this, when I checked out the first episode, it had just enough of a mythology hook to keep me going, plus enough of a standalone to make it where I don't have to relentlessly watch every single week and be worried about being spoiled, at least for the most part. And that's what brought me in, and that's what hooked me. How about you?
For me, I think it was seeing that first sequence of Red in the Box and going, oh, it's like Silence of the Lambs. I love some Papa Beans.
Yeah.
You know, that was really the first thing. And then I saw Harry Lennox was in it, and I was like, oh yeah, Harry Lennox, Dollhouse rules. And I was super excited to see Harry, so I know I'm probably like one of two Dollhouse fans, but if you're a Dollhouse fan, you can hit us up on Twitter at the Blacklist GSM and we can do a special Dollhouse conversation over there.
Who's the other fan? Elijah Dushku?
Oh, of course, Elijah Dushku.
Bazinga!
For sure.
Just kidding. That was a fine show for the three episodes I saw. What else? So what you want to break down, like, how we do this? Basically, if you are new to the show, we talk about the episode after it airs. We won't spoil anything from that point forward. Even if we know information, we're not going to spoil it. So if we read some spoiler online, we're not going to talk about it. And we will give theories. We'll give our ideas of what things are. And we take it basically the basic plot of what the show had, for the week. And then we break it down by character because we find it's easier to get to the real details by going character by character. And you want to know theory camp? What's your theory camp? You're the one that brought it up. You get to go first.
Oh, I get to go first?
Mm-hmm.
You're just going to, like, make everybody run away from the show from the get-go?
It's your theory. I mean, what theory? And I would argue that you popularized. I wouldn't argue. I would say you popularized. So what's the theory?
The theory goes that, that,
and you have to, this is the one you are most committed to at, as of this moment.
As of this moment, I am still committed to what is known as the mother theory, or some people have now popularized it as hashtag Red Arena. But basically, Katerina Rostova wanted to escape from the KGB, and because she had to hide from the KGB, she put her daughter into Sam's keeping, and then decided to change her identity to that of Elizabeth Keene's father, Raymond Reddington, based on the information that we now heard in season 6, right? That was the Rosviet episode.
Mm-hmm.
But I've had this theory since, I mean, it was lingering. We kind of called it the sex change theory in season 1. But then we kind of confirmed it all up into the mother theory about season 2, episode 4.
Yeah. And for new listeners, I don't rule that theory out. My argument is I don't feel like it's been earned because long story short, I come from a family of psychology. To me, to sell a transsexual argument, you really have to showcase that the character was desperately wanted to be a man, not just that they're in hiding. And that's where I don't think that has happened in the show. So, because that would be kind of insulting to many people. So to me, I'm not ruling that theory out because there is a lot of legwork that they could do before they announced the theory, because only a lot of the stuff we wouldn't know as the audience. So I've never ruled that theory out. Just not one I subscribe to. I'm more in line with something along the lines of brother / uncle to Masha that we just haven't officially identified as of yet. There would be no reason to really identify them until that came into vision. There are other theories going around, but that's probably the one I'm most subscribed to. But I'm not really linked to any theory 100%. I'm not stuck on anything. Like, there's nothing where I'm not fluid. You know, I can go from uncle to whatever. I can move really quick if I get new information. You know, some people are very fixed on their theory. And my argument has always been, once you get stuck on a theory, you're only going to see things from that point of view. So, like, you have always been very stuck on the mother theory. So no matter what happens, you see that as pertaining to that theory. I don't come at information that way. And as much as you might say you don't, you totally do.
I mean, I'm specifically looking for ways and clues, yes, to support the theory and make it work.
Exactly. See, I don't do that.
And debunk other things, but I'm not saying that I don't see the other ways that it could potentially go. I mean,
no, I'm saying you do that.
Yeah.
See, I'm saying you do that. You don't say it, but I definitely, I say he does that. Sure.
But on the
we try to have fun on this podcast too.
Exactly.
So please don't take anything seriously.
No, definitely not. And for this show specifically, for the podcast, we also make sure that we're open to all theories and have all conversations, even to the fact that there's still people out there that are very, very hip on the fact that this is still OG Daddy Raymond Reddington, because they're the burns on his back and other things that have happened the course of the season. And they've said, well, the DNA on the bones or the bones themselves could have been planted by a master spy, the N13 mystery man or mystery woman. So, I mean, yes, there is a plausibility, I guess, that
sure
is still out there. You know, the way the show operates, even though we've seen it, we've heard it numerous times on this very show from John Bogenkamp, have like said, no, Raymond Reddington is dead. And yes, Raymond Reddington was Liz's father. And yes, Raymond Reddington was Jennifer's father, but the Red we know is not Jennifer's father. So, but in theory, from the show narrative, you could make the argument that Daddy Gate is still in play.
I would make the argument it hasn't, because the showrunners have confirmed that it isn't. But let's go on. Let's move on. You see, here's, I guess, you know, everybody listening, for the most part, have listened to the podcast before. He's nicer than I am. Troy is nicer than Aaron. Aaron's probably the one you're going to write mean things on the internet about. So let's go into the rest of the show, right? I think we got to get it. I don't want to lose anybody because we keep talking about old stuff. Let's get into new stuff.
Yeah. So initial impressions of the episode first, and then we'll get into our case profile.
Well, I got to tell you, I just rewatched the season finale.
Before Kazanjian yep. Brothers, yep.
Yeah, I did. I thank God you said it. I can't say it right. And I
Aaron also has a problem with names, in case you don't know.
I do, and pronunciations of anything, really. But I really, really still enjoy that episode a lot, and I really love how they made it work. When you know they're just doing everything they can to make this work, and I'm sure a lot of it has to do with I play games that look just like that. So to me, it was just like it's kind of like a fun little comic world. So that still works for me. And this to me felt like a perfect finishing piece to that. I do feel like it wasn't quite the ba-bam that we've gotten in other season premieres, where at the end you get like a really big revelation of some sort. On the same token, I kind of know why they had to do that and where they're going. So, I mean, I think it was very good. I enjoyed the episode through and through. It didn't have that same ba-bam that I expected from a season premiere typically. In the past.
When I first watched it, I had to stop for a second because I had to make sure I was watching the right episode. Because I swear that opening pan shot of the city with the cop car driving down the road was the same opening shot they used in season 3.
Hmm. Did you go back and check?
I haven't yet, but I'm going to because it's driving me crazy. Because I was like, wait, am I watching? Is this season 8? Because I thought I've seen this before.
Now, that's just sad if you can remember that much detail, but that's why you're here.
It was a pandemic, man. We were locked down. What else are you going to do but watch some Blacklist, right?
Good call. Yeah, good call. That's why a lot of people caught up.
I thought that this episode was on point. It did the things that it needed to do. It reintroduced us to the characters. It gave us the traditional, like, hey, let me catch everybody up via Liz in 30 seconds, right? That usually happens at the start of every season. Mm-hmm. With basically telling the entire room, like, oh, by the way, here's some stuff I've been holding from you, which catches up the audience and any new members that come in. And I thought that it gave us enough closure to season 7 and set up some new things with Sikorsky and N13 and some of that other stuff. So I think for what a premiere is supposed to do, this hit every checkbox on the list. Sure, it might not have been as, like, super wow, awesome. But even Hetty, I thought, was actually really good this week, too.
Yeah, and I did like the little touch where, you know, Liz is reflecting back and Katarina / whatever you want to call her implies to her that, you know, he let you believe that he was your father this whole time. And then she reflects back to, well, when she asked him point blank, he actually said no. So it was on her for not believing it. But, you know, he did tell her that. So I did like that they added that little aside. I thought that was very important, and it also felt like this is how we're going to make sure people are all caught up to where we are. You know, we had a little crazy season last season because of, you know, everything that was going on, but want to make sure you guys are up to date. Here's where we are. Said this, buddy. You know, he said he doesn't lie to her. It's always just omission, and that was very direct, so you got to take him at his word. He was honest about that. And he also has said that this woman is not her mother, right? He mm-hmm. said that with his own words in season 7.
And
so it's up to you what you want to believe. Kind of like what the show is saying here. You're like, we've told you, it's up to you what you want to believe.
And I love that the final bit of that sequence has her sitting in front of the FBI building, just like Red at the start, because we're transitioning her into what Red has literally been the entire time, clearly evident in the conversation that Red has with Cooper at the end of the episode.
Yep. And I'm still Team Liz. Even though I know, you know, it's not necessarily a popular opinion, don't care. I still think Red's being a jerk by not bringing her into the fold. I get it. He's got his secrets, yada. But at some point, like he says in the show, you know, he lost her, and he lost her anyway, and he shouldn't have. All right. So profiling question from previous week. We didn't have one because, you know, it's been since, April? Whatever it was.
Long time ago.
But even though we didn't have one last week. We do have a profiling question this week, and because season 8 has begun, we're going to start it off right off the bat. Give us your theory. Who is this version of Raymond Reddington? Now, I'm hoping to see something I hadn't even thought of. That's what I'm hoping for. So give us your version of who this version of Raymond Reddington is.
So quick question on that for you. You get this N13 nuggets in this particular episode. 7 years of investment. If it's something completely brand new and only shows up in this season, are you going to be upset? Or do you want it to be something or something that, maybe not someone, because obviously it's still a secret who Red is, but does it have to tie back into all of the things and events that have happened for it to be earned if it's a completely new character this season?
Yes, and I'll be perfectly honest, I have no doubts that it will. Just because I don't believe necessarily what you believe or what several other people believe about different things doesn't mean that I don't believe that it'll be earned. I do feel like what goes missed, because people are so subscribed to whatever your theory, and I'm not just talking about your theory, I'm talking about everybody's theory. Everybody has a different theory. Because they're so subscribed to it, they feel like everything that they see only fits what their perception of Red Reddington is. I don't agree with that. I think no matter what happens, when the story ends, if it's this year or whatever, it's going to be fitting of everything that came before. I have no doubt about that. And I firmly, Kirk is the first thing people always throw up at me when I say, like, I don't subscribe to Red. The only thing Red would have to say is Katarina's still alive. Bam, Kirk doesn't kill him. So that works 100%. But people don't want to hear that for some reason. So I'm just saying that works. There are other things that work too. As long as it works, and I firmly believe it will, I'm good with it. I don't think it'll come out of nowhere, no.
My daughter's watching the show for the first time because she's old enough now. And we just watched Adrian Shaw conclusion the other day. And literally as Kirk stabs Red in the neck with the thing, and then Red whispers those sweet nothings in his ear, I literally leaned over to my daughter and went, I'm Katarina. My daughter's like, shut up. Walk away from me.
See what I mean? Because you're so stuck on it. That's the only thing it could be for you. But it could easily be Katarina's still alive.
Absolutely.
Katarina's still alive.
And which, so far she is, if we believe this person is Katarina.
Yeah, well, let's get to that. Well, you know what? Let's start with our case profile. Okay, Roanoke, we open with Red and Dembe just finding out that things aren't going according to plan. A man gets into a hotel room adjacent to a federal prisoner by stating he's there to help a man exposed to nuclear facilities.
Wait. But we have to define terminology here. Because what? Is above the same thing as adjacent? Because technically he was above the guy's room and came down.
No, he wasn't. He was adjacent.
The windshield thing, didn't he? He came down on the windshield washer platform.
No, but I'm saying he's adjacent. The hotel room was adjacent because it was on the same floor. So they had to go outside and around, but it was adjacent. I mean, it was like on the same floor connected. Okay. Adjacent by going outside. How's that?
Okay.
Whatever. However you want to say it. Ah, it's too early for this. Anyway, he's there to stage this elaborate breakout for this gentleman, for Lev Pasternik. Is that right? Did I say that right?
Yeah, Lev Pasternik. Pasternik.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've heard it both ways. Feds realize
he's
a bit
like Dr.
too late.
Nick, but a pastor.
Feds realize a bit too late that this is a coup. I will say these feds probably want to, even though obviously he's a great shot, not a great fed, because this should have been, you know, investigated a little quicker than it was. But whatever. Our prisoner realizes it's too late. He's standing on plastic and he's killed in this moment. I don't understand why no one has seen Lethal Weapon 2. You never, ever stand on or near plastic. As soon as you see it, you get the hell away from it. But that's our opening. So what did you think about this whole opening section?
Well, the guard, when Wrestler was questioning the guard, and he said, I shot him. I thought that was like a twist or a flip in the narrative, potentially, because the guy did shoot him, where the other guy shot him on the plastic, and he was dead. And I thought when Wrestler said to the guy, like, hey, I shot him, they were going to go to the warehouse and find him actually dead on the floor in the plastic. Because I'm like, why? Because I was still confused at that point of, like, why would they shoot the guy that just broke out? But I thought the opening was great. I thought the music behind the scene and the whole concept, and except for the one extra EMT person that basically tripped off the FBI guys. But all in all, I thought the opening was fantastic. I really did.
Yeah, it was a fun opening. Although when the plastic thing drives me nuts, not that they do it. I always think it's fun when they do it because, hey, if you're going to bump somebody, it makes sense to do it on plastic. For the characters, I'm like, you idiot. Walk out of that room. As soon as I walk in any room, I swear, if I go to your house, Troy, and you've got plastic on the floor, I walk straight back out. I'm not coming in. We're not. Oh, no, come in. We're going to have coffee. No, we're not. No, we're not. We'll have it on the porch. Let's go on the porch in public. Let's go. Well, there's no way.
This is the thing, though, because people, you know, whether they question the show or not, and it's consistency, but I think this is another way that they can say that they're being consistent in the show, because I remember not too long ago in season 7, there was a guy standing on a perfectly placed carpet that got shot. It got rolled up in a carpet, so at least they're being consistent with standing on things that can roll people up after they've been executed.
This is true. That is true. I think the show is very consistent for the most part. There's some things, I'm sure any show that goes 8 years is going to have inconsistencies because they got to stretch things out. But overall, I think the show's extremely consistent.
Well, and you
consistent.
Get different writers and directors.
Sure.
And
yeah. Yeah.
Over time.
All right. So Roanoke is a character who makes other people disappear, like Maddie Tolliver. And Red obviously wants to find Roanoke because he wants to get to Maddie Tolliver / Katerina Rostova, correct?
Correct.
And Roanoke makes war criminals disappear, just like that lost colony that mysteriously disappeared.
Yeah, so if you don't know about the show, I like to do some history, some trivia. So we did look up the lost Roanoke colony. It was Sir Walter Raleigh's attempts to found the first permanent English settlement in North America. First attempt was in 1585 by Governor Ralph Lane, and then again in 1587 when John White landed on the same island. It was this 1587 population that mysteriously disappeared. The fate of approximately 112 to 121 colonists remain unknown to this day, though speculation is that they may have assimilated with nearby Native American communities. Investigations by the Jamestown colonists produced reports that the Roanoke settlers were massacred, as well as stories of people with European features in Native American villages, but no hard evidence was ever produced. So definitely very similar to tonight's story, disappearing while yet blending into the surroundings.
You know, that that explanation was almost as long as that cat story.
Oh my God, the cat story.
Cat story. Like, is this thing still going? I went and made a snack and came back and he's still telling the cat story. Ah, just kidding. I like that story. All right. The only facial features that matter to me about this guy is that he has a bitchin' scar on his cheek. So that's important, probably. Not really, because it turns out it really didn't matter. Because Santiago Vega was hunted down by Hetty, and we find out it's not Roanoke, it's Katerina. The whole game's a ruse to get Dom and for us to get answers? Question mark.
Well, they did find Roanoke.
Yeah. But they Katerina hunted down Santiago Vega, and he was like in a... He was
doing old. His best Hector impression.
Thank you. That's what I was trying not to say. It. I'm like, I don't want to reference Breaking Bad again. But yeah, I'm like, why couldn't you get the guy that plays Hector? Oh, wait, he was already in the show.
I was like, where's the bell? Where's the bell? Is Hattie going to bring him a bell?
Oh, yeah. Ding, ding, ding. As soon as his hand was trembling, which I'm not obviously making fun of that condition at all. But as soon as his hand was trembling, I was like, oh, please put a bell under it. Please, dear God. That would be a great, fun throwback.
See, I can say that now because I saw Breaking Bad during the pandemic.
Oh, yeah, you finally finished it, didn't you?
I did.
One of the greatest shows of all time, yes or no?
I wouldn't say as a whole, but it was very enjoyable.
Great ending, though, right?
Great ending.
Yeah.
For sure.
That last season was intense. Intense. That's on Netflix, too. Only watch that if you're done with Blacklist.
That's for
all
sure.
All right, let's get into our characters.
Yeah. First up, we always talk about the music on the show because music definitely adds a lot to the environment of our watching experience. And season 8 opens up with a little jazzy swing from Amon Tobin and the song Bridge off his Permutation album from 1998.
Fun
and then
song.
We finish the episode with a classic and probably the entire music budget for the entire season because it's the only version of Landslide that should ever be played from Fleetwood Mac as Keenler fans scream in delight around the world.
Oh boy.
Fun fact though, we actually played Landslide at my father-in-law's funeral. So it was a nice moment.
How was that a fun fact? That's the saddest fact.
It's a great song.
Was it a fun funeral?
It was a very fun funeral, actually.
You know what? I got to hang out with your family more. They sound like a good
time. We went to Costa Rica and we went on a boat and dumped his ashes on this island that sticks out in the
water.
That's
right. That's right. Now that I remember that. Yeah.
It's a great funeral.
In the wrong way to word it, but I get what you're saying. All right. So
it's a great song and it should only ever be sung by Fleetwood Mac. All covers be damned.
You know what? I was just happy. So happy to hear another Fleetwood Mac song after that whole TikTok thing this summer.
Yes.
I needed to get away from the whole TikTok thing. I just did. Good for that guy. He sparked a movement. I think it's fantastic, but I needed a different Fleetwood Mac song.
Well, if you love the music as much as we do, you can get the playlists. We have them up on the website at theblacklistexposed.com. You can get one for Apple Music and one for Spotify, because again, we love everyone here on the show, except Amazon Music, because I don't have a subscription to Amazon Music and I don't want to make it again.
And that one guy that wrote that one review, we don't like you. All right. Dom is now played by a new actor, Ron Raines. I think he did a fine job, but I have to ask before we get into the character portion, this is obviously a change because Brian Dennehy passed away last season and they did do all due respects to him in the season finale, which is very, very sweet. But obviously they have more story with Dom, so they couldn't just relinquish the character completely. So they had to bring another actor in and fill that role. How do you feel Ron Raines is doing? I mean, he had very little to work with here, but in terms of replacing a beloved actor.
I don't think I'm going to say anything in the correct way in this exact moment, because nobody can replace Brian Dennehy in any way, shape, or form.
No.
But I'll be honest about the second time I saw him in the episode, Ron Raines, in this episode, I almost forgot that Brian Dennehy played him because they made his makeup and the way they shot and framed the shots. I mean, it almost looked identical to me that it didn't even, like, from my watching experience, didn't faze me at all. So I guess that's kudos to Ron for being able to make me, you know, acclimate to this new version of Dom in the show.
Yeah.
Because there is definite shows where you're like, that was not the girlfriend last season. Like, that is a completely different person. And so the fact that they actually went out and got someone that at least was close enough, and then they can do the whatever, bridge the uncanny valley to make it believable. I thought they did a great job. I thought it was really, really a good fit.
I have to tell you, I was extremely impressed with how this was handled. It wasn't, you know, a big show or any kind of clever in-joke to kind of hand the torch over to the new actor. It was just basically like, hit the ground running, let's go. This is our new Dom. And his appearance was very, very close, I agree, in many respects. On the same token, he doesn't really look anything like Brian Dennehy. And Brian Dennehy, if you didn't listen to last season, he's one of my favorite character actors. So to me, I knew this was going to be jarring, but it actually wasn't so much. I'm with you. After about 3 or 4 seconds, it kind of, okay, all right, my brain adjusted. You know, it was handled way better than when they switched that one guy in Game of Thrones, you remember, with the...
Oh, yeah.
They just completely flipped Daenerys's side hustle and replaced him with a guy that didn't even look remotely like him. You know, this very much fit the mold and also a solid actor in his own right. So I feel like this is a good switch.
Yeah, Ron Raines has been on the daytime soaps for like ever, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I don't think Clark Middleton, they're going to do the same thing. I don't think you could replace Glenn. Just very much a lot of that performance is that actor, and that makes a big, not that Brian Dennehy's wasn't, but I don't think you can do that. So I think they're probably going to, Glenn's going to pass away in the show, but this was the right fit for Dom because they obviously have a lot more story to tell.
For sure.
So we find out that the seizures are gone, but he needs to remain calm, which didn't happen at all. And part of that was due to Liz. But before we get there, I want to say, you know, he did say, I wanted Masha's trust. I had it. And it wasn't all a story. Those are two important aspects that he really does want Masha's trust. He wants his granddaughter to respect him and trust him. And also what he told her wasn't all a story.
So there was a plan to become Raymond Reddington. Ilya just did not become Raymond Reddington.
Just like we said when that episode aired, I think we said this very, very clearly. If you saw it on the screen, that's what happened. If you hear Liz say it, that's not necessarily what happened. But if you saw it, the showrunners are telling us this happened. Now, if you didn't see Ilya actually go under the knife, so therefore it wasn't Ilya. Turns out it wasn't Ilya. So we don't know who Raymond Reddington is. I'm sure some of you know, but you don't really know.
Right. We can guess, but
you have educated guesses.
Right.
Sure.
But yeah, I think that was super important for the show to also come out and say that, because it just puts everything to rest. Like, hey, some of this was true, some of this was fabricated, like we all thought. And by the way, you know, it was Liz that filled in some of these blanks herself. And just like they did that whole memory recollection of her going back, listening to Red over all those years, mm-hmm. I'm sure she can go back and go, oh, wait, no, he did tell me the truth. I'm the one that actually inserted my own opinion into the story, and him being a master spy used that against me in order to manipulate the situation.
Exactly. Now, three characters we can knock out pretty quick. Park, Aram, Dembe. None of them really did much this episode. There wasn't really a character arc. Would you agree?
Yeah, except Aram had a good couple nuggets there. The whole, it's a long story. No, it's a long story.
Yeah. That was good. He did the best with what he had, for sure. For sure.
Basically just put the noob in her place, right? Like, we'll catch you up later. You know, you got 7 seasons in a pandemic to watch it.
Amir can do a lot with a little. So yeah. That's always, he's always a fun. But in terms of character arc, there wasn't a whole lot of story for him in this episode.
You saw Amir did those Butterfinger commercials during the pandemic.
No. Uh-uh.
Yeah.
I don't watch commercials. I don't know if you heard this, but you don't have to watch commercials anymore. It's not a thing.
Well, see, I have to watch the first 4 seconds of commercials because it comes up on YouTube.
Okay. I haven't seen the commercial. Is he doing Butterfinger commercials?
Yeah, he's doing the Butterfinger. It's the BFI, the Butterfinger Investigators, and he plays Detective Hugh Dunnett.
What? What's his name?
Hugh Dunnett.
Got it. That's clever.
And he's good. He nails it. It's pretty. They're pretty funny.
What's the crime? What is he trying to solve?
People stealing other people's Butterfingers.
Well, those are some bastards.
But they're good. Yeah. They're good. Look them up on YouTube. There's a couple.
Well, you know what I always wonder when actors do those things? I would honestly forego payment if they gave me a lifetime supply of Butterfingers.
You're insane.
I mean, you could spend money quick. Butterfingers last forever.
Now, if I could voice one of the M&M characters and then give me a lifetime supply of M&Ms, chocolate only, then we've got some conversations to have.
Well, yeah. I mean, I would much rather have Reese's peanut butter cups or Twix bars or Snickers, but I'm just saying, I mean, Butterfinger's not bad and free for life. I think that would be great. I would weigh 385 pounds. Not there's anything wrong with that.
I did so much work to get the weight off during the pandemic. I don't want to put it back on.
Yeah, I know. I lost 10 pounds. What? Let's talk about wrestler. So we're not going to talk about that moment until the very end. So just hold tight on that one. But
there was a moment? Did I miss it?
Yeah, something happened. Thing happened. There was a thing.
I have to go back and watch. I must have missed it.
Yeah, it was a big deal. Questions Keane's allegiance throughout the episode. That's like his big through and through in terms of the episode. And at the end, Liz asked Wrestler for time, right? And also, she needs him to keep believing in her. So she feels like she's not really as far off the beaten path as you think. And he feels like, I don't know. Are you still the Liz Keane I've always come to love? No. And what did you think about him questioning her allegiance throughout this episode?
I think the allegiance questioning is fine. I think what this episode did really well was basically give us the crux of the show, 7 seasons, and kind of remind us of where people were back in the beginning of all of this when it went down. So this was very much Wrestler season 1. You know, he questions Liz constantly. He's chasing her in season 3 because she broke the law, killing Connolly. Right. So this is nothing out of the norm. And I think I appreciate that from this particular moment.
Mm-hmm.
The one thing I want to ask you is, were you a little bit challenged or upset by the fact that he's all like, you know, you need to turn yourself in, blah, 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 blah. And not once did Liz come back and say, hey, jackass, I made a body disappear in the back of a car for you, so you owe me one.
She did mention it.
I wanted to be a little bit more forceful and
Well, I mean, she mentioned, what do you want her to say? Smack him over the head and then show him pictures of where the body's buried?
Yeah.
I mean, she brought it up.
Well, if she's supposedly this destiny to become this person and on this path or whatever, I would have expected a little bit more, like, you know, over the head hitting to say, you know, but I think where the conversation comes with that is like you said, is she as far gone as Cooper and Red are thinking she is in that conversation? Or is this her glimmer of hope by the fact that she doesn't do a Raymond Reddington move and say, you need to give me space because, buddy, I got something on you.
Yeah, I don't think it was that. I think she was just trying to make the case for, you should be more empathetic to my plight because you've done something shady yourself. And of course he can't, which she did do. She threw that on the table, just not as across the face as you apparently would like. You would like her to hurt him. You would like her to just hurt him and make him sad. But he responded with, you know, it wasn't the same thing. I was a teenager. You know, you're a grown ass woman. Get your stuff together.
So clarify. Yeah, she did talk about the fact that he shot Tommy Markin.
Yes.
100%. Absolutely. I'm more saying, like, by the way, I cleaned up your mess by getting rid of that body and not getting you in trouble with the feds when your brother and you were going to turn yourselves in.
I don't think.
So you owe me one is what I was hoping she was going to say. Like, you owe me.
I would,
so give me a break.
I wouldn't like that. I wouldn't like that because that would be more of what Red would do. That's not Liz. That's not the character of Liz. So I thought this was the right way to handle it.
So she just reminded him
that you aren't perfect either, but she wasn't trying to curt favor. She wasn't trying to threaten him and wasn't giving him ultimatums or, you know, anything like that. She was just saying, hey, you've been in a dire straits too, and you didn't necessarily make the right call. So let's hold back on the old judgment there, buddy.
So you're on the side of Liz isn't as far gone as we might think.
Correct.
Okay.
I mean, I'm hoping she kills a bunch of people. Like, I really wanted her to be Batman at this point. You know, Batman in the Zack Snyder's universe.
Mid-season 5, Liz. Little track shoot drag along the...
A little Ruin? You bring Ruin into this? It's one of my favorite episodes. I would argue it's probably my top 3. If not one of my favorite episodes of the whole show. So, yeah, I'll bring Ruin. Bring it.
And the ice chips, little torch by flame gun. Yeah, that was awesome.
Love it. All right, we'll come back to whatever that was. Cooper, your allegiance has to be to us, not to her, not to Mama. That didn't work out. And also, he says to Red, under your tutelage, she's become someone else, someone he doesn't recognize anymore. And he tells Red that his assistance is not required. So basically, throughout the episode, Cooper is telling Liz that he needs the allegiance to be to the task force, and she ultimately betrays the task force, while at the same time telling Red that this is on you. And Red's like, no, it's not. She was always going to go this way.
And this has nothing to do with Harry Lennox playing the part of Harold Cooper in any way, shape, or form. But I think over the 7 seasons, I think Cooper has been the most flip-floppy when it comes to Liz in particular. Because you go back to season 2, like Cooper was like, run, Liz, run. You know, I'll figure something out. Just go. Get out of here. And now he's all like, well, you need to do duty, God, country, and all that fun stuff. And I think there was even another time he flipped back and forth back in season 5 where he himself flipped, right? Because he was going after that, the kid, right? That gunned down, you know, somebody or whatever. I don't remember the exact episode, but I think Cooper has gone back and forth more than Red has in this situation. And I think that that's probably the one complaint I have of this episode. Because he's taking the moral high ground here again, just because Red is the bad guy, the criminal. So in order to have the bad guy, good guy conversation, like Cooper has to play the straight and narrow, which he really isn't when it comes to Liz. He's just as
complicit. Accepting?
Perplexed? I don't know.
Bewildered? Let's just throw a bunch of adjectives or verbs in there.
Complicated when it comes to Liz?
Yeah, well, I mean, definitely.
Compromised.
Compromised. That's a good word. A good word.
I knew I'd get there eventually.
But I do want to say, like, I am with Cooper on this one. She was not the same person, and maybe she had shades of darkness in her before, but it wasn't really until Red came into her life that she's needed to access all of that. So, I mean, I feel like, I'll be honest with you, and you and I have talked about this in the podcast many times. To me, the character of Red Reddington as much as I love him, and James Spader does a fantastic job, doesn't take much responsibility for the trauma he's brought to Liz. And sure, some of that is not his fault, and some of that is her fault because she keeps, you know, sticking her nose where it doesn't belong. But in the same token, it's because of him being in her life. And some of this could be rectified if he would just set her straight on whatever the situation is.
And because
he's the bad guy. People need to remember he's the bad guy.
And he now has to suffer the consequences because of his actions and decisions that he's made about her life. And that's where he's at the end of this episode.
But we're like, I feel like fans, because we love Spader and we love Red, we're always like, oh, you know, poor Red. He's going to have to suffer the consequences of his actions. What about her, man? She's the one who got all that trauma because of this situation. I'm a Team Liz guy. You know, not that I'm not a Team Red guy. I'm just saying, if you, to me, basically, I don't know the full story on Red yet, obviously. No one does. But you line the two up, I feel much more empathetic to Liz than I do to Red as a character.
You know, somebody that we do know more of the story on. That's Katarina.
Is she in the show or is that Maddie Dolliver?
I don't know. The whole time I'm listening to this conversation, I sit there and I go, well, how much of it was true and how much of it wasn't true? Because you didn't show it to me. You only had her telling me the story and getting all weepy about the whole fact that, you know, her daddy basically put her into the Red Sparrow service. And then she had to lay down when she was 15 years old with another man and steal American government society stuff. And Dom was her handler. It's like, I started like, oh my God, this is terrible. I feel so bad for you. Like, and I'm going, wait a minute. No, if she is Katarina, she's a master spy. She could just be spinning a tale. And if Red says that that woman is not your mother, then she's always been spinning a lie to pull on Liz's heartstrings. Cause we also know after 7 seasons that Liz is the most gullible person on the face of the earth, even though she has the best profiling skills supposedly. The story's interesting. I don't know how much to believe and how much not to believe at this point.
I would like to interject something to that argument. Okay. If that's okay.
Yeah, go ahead.
Sure. So, you know, much has been made that, Katarina Rostova, you know, if this was her, she would never have abandoned her child and she would never be so cold and da 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 da, which I still disagree with because time is a lot, especially many, many years of that. And a lot of her explanation, you know, where she's talking about the daughter being a domineering spy master, didn't have a choice. 15, I had to sleep with my first American soldier. Dom was the guy who ordered me. One reason I gave up my little girl, I couldn't have done that unless I knew you were safe, and you were safe until Reddington pulled you into this. I was betrayed by my father and my best friend, meaning Dom and Ilya. I don't know who Reddington is. All of that could be smokescreen, could be spy stuff, could just be basically manipulating her. You know, I thought she delivered it pretty effectively, manipulation or not. So I will say that. But in the same token, it could very well be true that she is not her mother, but she is also her mother. And what I mean by that is we've only seen the story up to a certain point in terms of backstory. It very well could be that Dom and Red are actually protecting her or trying to protect her from Katarina for reasons we don't know about. And therefore, we don't know other details that would make it so that maybe Katarina isn't really her mother in respects to she just gave birth to you, but she's not really your mother. You know, there is that argument. And I think not enough of us take that as a possibility, but it is a possibility.
So Red has really been more of a father, or even Sam has been more of a father to Elizabeth than Raymond Reddington was, because Raymond Reddington is, for all intents and purposes, shot, killed, dead, bones in a bag.
True.
Yep. So you're applying that same logic here that Katarina may have birthed you, but was never really a mother. Kaplan was more of a mother to Masha than Katarina was.
Exactly. And the case could be made, you know, once we get more details, maybe Katarina did something after the moments we've seen that was so awful that they just can't see her as her mother anymore.
The thing she did to betray Dom and make Dom be all pissed off and mad at her.
Yes, possibly. Yeah. Because obviously Dom is a very important character in this story. Otherwise, they could have just had Red relay it in a flashback or something. So they didn't need to keep the actor or the character on.
Yeah.
Unless there's a lot of story that needs to be told from his point of view. So yeah, I think that could be a factor. And sometimes we get, like I said, we get stuck in our own theories. So we won't consider other options. And I think that should be considered.
And then we've got people that are stuck in their own theories that are going, you didn't give up your child because you had been ordered by Dom to do stuff.
We don't know what happened after that. Like, she could have done it from that point forward. And then, like, but she never went back for her child, even after the kid was safe, because, you know, she had to go into hiding. Maybe all of that's true. And that could be considered to be what kind of mother would do that. You know, I mean,
sure.
There are considerations that I think could be made when you're making an argument for a theory. You got to consider other options.
Absolutely.
Because we don't have facts. You know, I know a lot of people love to say, no, we know this, we know that. We don't know. We only know what we've been shown so far.
Right. But if you are one of those people that are stuck on a theory, then that's the line you're hanging on to. You're saying, like, you didn't give up your little girl because you were, you know, sleeping with men at age 15 by your father. You gave up your little girl because there was a fire and there were people onto you from the cabal that wanted to kill you because you didn't do what you were supposed to do by Christmas.
She didn't say that. She said, one reason I gave up my little girl was, you know, she had to make sure she was safe, and she was safe until Reddington pulled her back into this. That's what she said.
But that's not the reason she gave up her little girl, if you go by Rosfiat, Requiem, all the
past. Well, she did give her up to keep her safe. Yes, she did.
Well, yeah, to give her up to be safe. But it's not, one of the reasons wasn't because Dom ordered her to do stuff.
That line was meant to, I'm speaking from the character's point of view, regardless, like, whatever you think of her, like, her point of view, she's from Katarina's point of view at that point. And she says very clearly, I thought, that she's just saying that Dom basically ordered her into all the stuff that she was doing. That's what led her down that path to where she had to put her into where she could be safe. So it made sense to me.
It's a general overstatement of the entire conversation.
Yeah. Yes. I think you're being too literal about that.
Right. Well, that's what I'm saying. Like, people that are stuck in the theory would grab this as a literal point.
I definitely think it was more of a broad stroke than it was a literal. Now, N13 came up. Oh, and actually, I would say the line that probably more people are going to hook on was, a daughter's need for her mother's approval is nature's most powerful force. Because if you are in the Katarina is fake arena, which, you know what? I honestly, I'm pretty 50-50 on that one. So I could go either way on if Katarina, because I still say, yes, it could be an imposter meant to keep Katarina in hiding or something. On the same token,
I'm 70-30, by the way, fake. But yes, there is still a possibility that it's like, she keeps saying some stuff that I'm like, maybe she is real.
Maybe she is real. But that line definitely feels that feeds people who are definitely more than 50%.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
For sure.
Now, I want you to take us through. You're way better with the details. So when it comes to the N13 mole, explain that for listeners.
Let's see if I can actually do this right. There was a spy. I don't even know if it's a guy or a girl. But there was a spy who had 13 pieces of information that basically could bring down governments. And then he or she expanded upon that network to do that for other governments. And so the story basically was that this N13 mole, Katarina believes, is Raymond Reddington, and that he weaseled himself into the FBI to steal United States secrets and keep the charade going as to who N13 is all about. And all of the information, the blackmail file, if you will, on all of these governments and all of these officials and all of these people, all these years, that file is the Sikorsky archive.
Well, she thinks he's either the mole or knows who the mole is.
Or knows who the mole is, right.
Right. Yep. And so she lived on the run, hunting for a crime she says she didn't commit. And it's all about this. And if she finds the mole, she can basically clear her head, her name.
Now, regardless of the Red Arena camp, if you're just in the fake arena camp, right? If you're in fake arena, I also thought, well, Katarina's a ghost. Nobody really knows where she is. Could Katarina Rostova, whoever she is, also be N13? Could Sea Duke be N13? Because we still haven't gone back to the Sea Duke storyline also. So anybody that we've seen, this is why my question was, if N13 is a completely different person that doesn't tie back into anything in the history of the show, would you be upset? Because I'm hoping that N13 comes out to be either Katarina, Sea Duke, or Red at the end of the day.
I see why you are stuck on that. I still say there are so many reasons why we wouldn't know who this person would be until we get to the end. There are lots of options and open available theories to that. So I refuse to succumb to the, it's got to be this person, or this person just because of this late in the game. I don't feel like they would have to explain who this character is yet, but I do think there have been plenty of hints as to who the character is in the past that it'll make sense whenever we get there.
So if N13 is a completely mystery person introduced this season, as long as the reveal of said person ties back into the storyline, you're good.
Yep. Absolutely. Okay. What about you?
Yeah, I think that'd be fine. Like, I've seen people introduced at the last minute. Like, I'm thinking, like, I mean, not that they were really introduced last minute, but I'm thinking, like, Battlestar Galactica, when they start to reveal who the five are, and you're just like, oh, man. And then there's, like, there's the fifth one, and you're just like, of course it is, right? So it's like, it feels like that, where even if N13 ends up being somebody completely brand new, I feel like they'll have something to do with Ilya. They'll have something to do with Dom. They'll have something to do with Katarina. They'll have something to do with whatever the dude's name that's been chasing Katarina this whole time. I forget what his name is off the top of my head. So yeah, I think he'll have nuggets. He or she will have nuggets tied into the mythology of the show, even if it's a completely brand new person. I'm hoping it's not a brand new person, because then you have to go back and do all the freaking homework, and that's just exhausting for the podcast. But we will do it if that's what it takes.
I'm just going to watch that episode and be like, oh, snap! That's what I'm going to do. Troy's going to do all the homework.
It's kind of what I did at the end of this episode.
Yeah, fair enough. Let's see. So Red, moving on to Red, we got two characters left. Red, his tremors are gone, but his condition is here, and it's Gigundus.
What the hell kind of word was that?
I don't know, but I like it. I'm going to use it. We find out this other story. We get a couple stories this episode, but Li Chang Yuan ate wolf berries and lived a much longer life. So you would agree that Red is definitely dying and he's trying to extend that. Yes,
for sure.
Okay. I don't know
if he's going to make it to 257 or whatever the hell that was, but anything over 150 sounds like a chore.
A lot. Yeah. Sounds like a lot. It sounds like, I have a hard time moving around now. I can't imagine trying to move around 150. Unless I'm a vampire. That would be sweet. All right. He tells a story from 98 or 99 about a cat he came across, one who knew him. And now he wants that cat. And I assume the cat is Katarina?
Could be a
cat. Arena?
Yeah, it could be an allegory.
Could be. I mean, it's a cat. Her name is Katarina.
But they locked eyes and they felt each other and then she ran away.
Cat. Arena. I feel like this is on the nose. I could be wrong.
But the cat was crying and the cat was all weepy and sad and it was just a kitten. Doesn't sound like Katarina there.
The cat knew him. But she doesn't know who Reddington is. Or at least this Katarina.
So what you're saying is the cat and Red were like soulmates and they shared one experience.
It's not what I said. No, that's what you want. That's what you want to say. Hey, like I said, your theory could work, but there's a whole lot of sexual identity stuff that would have to be hammered in there for it not to be insulting. So I have not seen that personally.
You know, we haven't seen any tremors from Red in this episode.
True. We didn't see it because she said his tremors are gone. Yeah. I said that. She said that. I repeated that.
You don't. Yeah, Liz said that.
Why don't you ever listen when I talk?
I don't know. I was so worried about Gigundus.
God.
He's good. All right. You know what? Red has had a Gigundus improvement in his health this episode.
You haven't had a Gigundus improvement in your listening skills. I could tell you that over the summer. All right. Red is irritated. He's been double-crossed by Liz. I don't know why he is. I mean, he's been double-crossed by her a couple times. You'd think he'd be used to it by now. What did you think about how he sat at the end of this where he's like, I lost her, Dembe, I knew it, and I let it happen anyway. Do you feel like he would actually do anything different, though, honestly?
His secrets are his secrets for a reason, so probably not. And I kind of wanted Dembe to be like, man, I told you so.
I think he did. I mean, he gave him kind of like,
You knew this was a possibility, and you just didn't listen.
Yep, you knew that was an option. I mean, I get he looks sad and mopey. I have a hard time feeling bad for him because in my mind, the character has had ample opportunity to bring Liz more into his confidence at this point. Now, granted, we don't know the whole reason why he hasn't. on the same token, I mean, it's hard for me to feel empathetic toward a character that had every opportunity to make the situation smoother and chose not to do it because he likes the omission game.
It sounds like Dom's reasons too. Like, I want to tell you, I want you to be truthful, but I'm in a rock and a hard place. I can't talk about it.
Mm-hmm. I tell you what, Dom was pretty scared, right? He did not look happy in an ambulance. He's like, what? Wait, what? What are you doing? It's going to hurt me. Don't do this.
It's crazy.
It is crazy. All right, Liz, lastly, tells the task force Maddie Tolliver is her mother, Katerina Rostova. That happens pretty quick, which I feel like at every premiere, Liz has to really catch the task force up to speed on whatever she's been lying about.
For some of us that have watched the show like so intently as we have, especially in this particular community, I literally feel like it's just like they pause the TV show and Liz just turns around and goes, okay, everybody, here's what's going on.
That's exactly what happened. Yeah.
I mean, it feels that happened like last season just too. Like you're just pulled right out of the experience. And it's like, okay, campfire time. Liz Teacher is here. Take your seating squares.
I'm still on Team Liz. Don't care. All right. Again, she asks Red for details. He won't say anything, but he doesn't lie. He just withholds, which for new listeners, Troy and I have had this long debate. I consider lying omission. So I consider Red to be a liar when he does that. Troy does not consider him to be a liar because he says it's only a lie if you actually speak it. So we have a difference of opinion on that.
Correct.
So you guys weigh in on what you think. Is he lying or is he not lying? But still, you know, makes a play. But she does realize her mother can't be trusted as well. And I do want to say, you know, it's interesting. Even though she knows that, she still goes along with the plan to kidnap Dom. So there is a situation where Liz knows she can't trust anybody, but she needs the answers. And she's finally sick of waiting for them. So she's going to get them from Dom. Now, I would be very not happy as a fan if we don't actually get some. Because, you know, we've had this play before, would you agree? Where she's not going to rest until she gets some answers and then she...
We have?
Yeah. Yeah, it's happened before.
How many years is this?
So would you agree that if she doesn't get any, that would be frustrating as a fan? If she doesn't get any?
At this point, yes. 100%. Okay.
All right. Just making sure we're on the same page.
Especially because she could have had the answer and she was like, you know, I don't really need to know because I love you. You're the bestest.
See, I was not on Team Liz that moment. That's where I was, Team Red, because I'm like, you, shame on you. Shame on you. And also, you would have known this if you would have opened that envelope a long time ago. Mm-hmm. You would have had some answers. All right, so Liz did outplay Reddington. I thought that was pretty great because I did not see that coming. I mean, I kind of thought there might be a play, but I like how this played out. And I like how she kind of owned it right away. What did you think about the Liz betrayal?
I thought that we kind of expected this to happen. I mean, she basically set up that she was going to be siding with her mother, quote unquote, Maddie Tolliver, whatever.
Yeah, she's going to be Batwoman.
Yeah, at the end of last season. So the twist that she went along with Katerina does not surprise me at all. I think the way she went about it was kind of cool. Like, hey, like I know this armored plated van guy, and I can get some new tires on my van and, you know, kiss your butt, you kiss my butt, and we'll all be good. And I thought that was pretty creative way to get around the whole situation. I like the MacGuffin with the dump truck or the garbage truck at the old warehouse.
Yeah,
to throw him off the guy on the side of the road concept. Yeah, I thought all of it was good. Like, I have really no complaints on the entire sequence. Now, the fact that she completely pissed off her entire team. Oh, wait, sorry, we've been there before, too, when she killed herself in season 3 and then came back to life and everybody hated her.
That was different, though. That was different.
And then that time when she went into a coma and decided to abandon her team so that she could figure out her own head and then finally come back to the team. So, yeah, this is Liz scripted 101.
Yeah, Liz does this. She's flaky. She wants answers. She doesn't want answers. Hopefully, she just commits to getting answers this time. I mean, honestly, she needs to get something. I'm not saying the whole thing. You won't get that until the last episode. Totally get that. But we need something. Some extra nugget. Something solidified.
Yeah.
Whether this is Katerina, is this fake Arena, we need that solidified, I think, very, very soon.
I love you all,
I would like to be able to believe that this is her mother. But there hasn't been enough to make me believe that, you know?
There's been a lot more to make you not believe it, to be quite honest.
Yes and no. I feel like it's 50-50. Like, if next episode Red said, hey, that is Katerina Rostova, but I don't consider that to be her mother, that would work with what we've seen thus far. So that, to me, would be fine. I just want something concrete. I don't want to wonder about that.
Oh, snap. 'Cause I,
what?
This is my brain working literally in real time.
Oh, people. Boy.
That whole concept about it's her mother, but not her mother, like their biological mother, but not the woman that raised her. Remember the whole, like, she dyed her hair blonde and Red was like, wow, you look amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, maybe her mother that raised her was blonde, or the woman that, I don't know, just a thought.
Well, you did see Maddie Tolliver's got some blonde hair.
Right.
Just saying. She did kiss him when she saw him.
You might be onto something.
Just saying. Might have had some feelings for her.
See, this is the difference. See, in my head, I'm like, Aaron is a freaking asshole. That's omission. But when I say, Aaron, you might be onto something, that's a bold-faced lie because he's not onto anything.
All right, dum-dum. That's three times I got to use it in one episode. I'm pretty happy. All right, here we go. Betrayed the Task Force. We talked about that. Now, you know, let's talk about... that.
So the question I have first is, when that scene started, did you think it was going to end that way? Could you see it coming, or was it a shock?
Which part? That she kissed him or that she took the gun?
No, leading up to the kiss part. Like, did you see the kiss coming, or were you kind of like, oh, they actually went there. Holy shit.
I will be perfectly honest. Every second that they were talking back and forth and they got a little bit closer, I got a little bit closer to my TV because I was like, oh, wait. Oh, it's happening. Oh, it's happening. It's happening. It happened. Ah! Oh! But was she doing it for the gun? So, I mean, I went through a lot of emotions in that scene. I thought it was a great scene and also fed both people that are for a Keenler romance and people that are against it, which I thought was just fantastic. I thought that was absolutely fantastic. I'm like, that is how you piss off an entire fandom in one episode, in one moment. Well done. Well done.
I'm watching that unfold and I'm like, oh, when he's like, I'll go to bat for you. I was like, oh, they're going to kiss. This is it. They're going to kiss right now. And then she reaches in for that gun. And I was just like, oh my gosh, I cheered louder for the gun pull than the kiss. Even though the kiss was like, I was like, oh, it's finally happened. It's kind of cool. Like, they're playing in the fans a little bit. But when she pulled out the gun, I was like, yes, that is the blacklist that I love, because that is a lexical ambiguity point blank in people's faces, because literally one half of the crowd is like, that's freaking awesome, Keenler forever. And the other end of the group is like, yes, Liz is a badass. She's like Red.
Exactly. It played so well to everything, really. It was a great moment. I thought they played it well. And I'll be perfectly honest, maybe you saw, I did not see the gun pull coming. The kiss, oh, I didn't see
the
gun pull
coming at all. The kiss was kind of telegraphed. But yeah. The gun pull, no, that was great.
Man, now the question becomes, do you think that was legitimate on her end? Like, real? Because you can obviously, you would say wrestler, definitely, because he let it happen. Or he was in it, he kissed back. But was she playing him, or does she have feelings for him? Your call.
Man, it's tough, because I feel like with the conversation from Brothers, you know, you're my island and all that other fun stuff. Mm-hmm. I feel like up until the kiss moment, like at the kissing itself, I think it's true. I think there's definitely something there, right?
Mm-hmm.
But she also in that moment knows that wrestler's never going to, she even says it like, I know you're never going to let me get away. So because of that, she literally formulates the plan to take his gun in that same moment or just before that moment. But I still think I don't think she manipulated the situation to get the gun. I think the situation allowed itself to give her an opportunity to escape. That makes sense.
It makes sense. And I think it was legitimate. I think she has feelings for him, but she also needed to get away.
Yes.
And she needed to make sure he didn't try to bring her in because he's a goody two shoes.
Yes. Like, was the entire thing manipulation to get away? I don't think it's complete 100% manipulation.
Mm-mm. I think she wanted to taste those lips.
Run his fingers through his hair.
Oh, man. She wanted to mess his hair up. Please. I was so mad. I'm like, come on, mess the hair up. Mess the hair. You've been promising me for years. Do it. Do it. Didn't happen.
No. So I don't think it was 100% manipulation. I think it was a a real moment with a matter of convenience at the same time.
Oh, love it. Love it.
It was so good.
It was. It was my favorite moment of the episode too, because I really love that. You know, when they play to both sides of a fan base, I just love that moment, because it's like, it all works. It all works. You can piss everybody off in this one moment. It's fantastic. All right, well, that's going to do it for this discussion of this particular episode, but don't leave just yet. We got more to go. I want to take a quick second to say thank you to all of those that are supporting us by going to Patreon. That's P-A-T-R-E-O-N, patreon.com/theblacklistGSM. Special big thanks to our honorary blacklister, Patricia. Also, a special shout out to our task force members, Lacey, Marilyn, Judy, and Sharon. All of these people receive cool gifts from us, and you could get a cool gift as well for donating at the $20 level or higher. Do you want a cool t-shirt? Maybe a coffee mug? Come on, you know you do. You don't have to stay at the $20 level forever, just a few months to get the cool gifts.
Yeah, and Christmas is coming right around the corner, so do it for a Blacklist fan in your life that you want to give a nice gift to.
There you go.
And we're going to do some changes this year for Patreon, because we're moving into the twilight of the series. Don't know if this is the last season or not, but it's getting on in years, and so we're going to change up our $5 level starting next week. So moving forward, our $5 patrons, you guys will get early access to the podcast. That's right. It'll most likely drop Friday night right after the show like we've been doing. But the patrons get first access, first dibs on Friday night, and then everybody else will get the podcast sometime on Sunday. So if you want to get in on the goods early, go ahead and head over to P-A-T-R-E-O-N, patreon.com/theblacklistGSM. And drop your $5 in the hat so you can make sure you get all the dirt as soon as possible. Stay tuned. We got Red's Rhetoric, and we'll close out the show right after this.
You obviously love podcasts, but are you also a fan of movies and television? Do you want to listen to a show that reviews entertainment honestly and casts pretentiousness to the wind? That debates both film and TV topics in a fun, good-spirited way, while still getting to the heart of why we all love them so much? Then don't miss the award-winning weekly podcast, The Hollywood Outsider, now available on your favorite podcast app or at TheHollywoodOutsider.com.
Hi, it's Megan Boone, and you're listening to Blacklist Exposed on Golden Spiral Media.
Welcome to Red's Rhetoric, that part of the show where we relive some of those wise, witty stories from Red that may or may not have greater significance not only in the show, but maybe also in life. Then each week, you guys get to vote for your favorite over on our weekly web poll inside each episode post over on the website, theblacklistexposed.com. This week, our first story comes when Red is enamored by a cat.
Years ago, I was in a taxi on my way to a rendezvous in Kowloon City. This must have been around 98, 99. They just closed Kai Tak Airport, and everything was going in and out of the big, brand new Hong Kong International. The place was gigundous, largest passenger terminal in the world at the time. I'd come in on a cargo flight, and it was absolute madness over there. My ground transport had gotten screwed up, so I grabbed a taxi. I was running about an hour late and was a little out of sorts, so I'm sure I put the driver on edge, although he seemed pretty unflappable and he had a hell of a heavy foot. Anyway, he's starting to look around for someone to mess with, so I'm feeling a little vulnerable. I'm looking out the window. We're stopped at a light. And all of a sudden, right there in the middle of the intersection is this scrawny little cat, a kitten, really, crying, meowing, scared to death, and traffic everywhere. I mean, everywhere. Four lanes, and I just... And then the cat looked at me, stopped crying, closed its mouth, blinked, and just stared at me. It took a couple of steps forward. I started to open the door, and whoosh, the taxi took off. And there we went. What do I want? I want that cat. And Roanoke.
Our psychic. It was so long. It's like Wolfberry.
Somebody wrote that. I'm thinking about the writer who had to write that. He's just like... And I'm just going to keep going. I'm just going to keep going for it. I wonder if they're going to give me 10 minutes to tell this story. I don't care. I'm writing it. And it's a very riveting story, but I'm just like, I can't believe how long this is.
And I was like thinking back to when we had Z Hatley on, and he's like, some of the episodes come in like an hour 10, hour 25, and we have to figure out what to cut. And I was like, did this episode fall short? They just had to keep, like, you heard the clip. I chopped up the clip, and I thought it came up pretty well, and it still got the point across.
Yeah, that's funny.
Because it was long.
It was long.
Oh, man. The second one this week is Cooper and Red's conversation about how they parent Liz.
We need to find them, Harold. I'm searching in my world. You need to search in yours. They must be found.
Elizabeth doesn't want to be found by either of us.
Forgive me, but at the moment, I'm not interested in what she wants.
At the moment or ever? All Agent Keene wanted from you were answers about her past, her parents, and you refused to give them.
What I've given her is an education on how people think, what they want, and what they're willing to do to get it.
We'll find her, but not so she can continue her education. We'll do it because we're concerned about her, and because she broke the law. I'm angry with Agent Keene, but I'm livid with you. Under your tutelage, she's become someone I fail to recognize.
Oh, I think you do. You may not want to. You and I both may not like what it looks like, but we both recognize it for what it is. Her destiny.
Which was your favorite? If you want to rescue all the crying kitties, vote hashtag red cat. Or if you truly know what lies ahead for Liz, vote red density. I mean, destiny.
Did you mean to do that? Was that intentional?
Of course it's intentional.
Okay.
Anytime you can throw one Back to the Future, it's worth it.
All right. Well, that will conclude this discussion. So now is the time to recommend The Blacklist to your friend, your enemy, your neighbor. And when you do, please also recommend that they listen and subscribe to The Blacklist Exposed podcast. All the case files can be found at theblacklistexposed.com and everywhere great podcasts can be found. And it's great to be back with you, Mr. Troy Heinrichs.
It's definitely good to be back with you, Aaron. That was a lie.
Yeah, that felt like a lie. Honestly, I didn't believe you at all when you said it.
And this is the part of the show where we currently close up the show, but normally we have special agent intel. So we have lots of places you can do that. You can hit us up on Twitter at the Blacklist GSM. You can join our Facebook group. That's facebook.com/groups/theblacklistGSM. Leave a comment on the post on the website, theblacklistexposed.com, or comment on the YouTube video of the podcast over at youtube.com/theblacklistexposedpodcast. Lots of great places there to have great conversation, lots of great fans. The community on Facebook has grown exponentially during the pandemic.
Yes.
So definitely go on over there and meet some new friends and keep it civil, no politics, all that fun stuff. But we'll pull the best theories every week. So come up with some great ideas. We want to see some crazy stuff. N13 and all this new Sikorsky stuff has got to get people brewing, get the machine going again, get your brains polished up, because we are in for some very exciting episodes in the next couple of weeks. So we want to hear your thoughts, your theories, and we'll feature them right here on the show. And if that's not enough, you can follow Aaron if you want to. I don't know why you would.
I don't either.
That was the truth. Over at Aaron Smirks on Twitter. I'm at Troy Heinrichs on Twitter. And you can talk about whatever you want with us, like maybe even if an armor-plated run-flat vehicle gets good gas mileage. Who knows?
I know it does not. All right, well, big thanks for listening. Don't forget to answer our profiling question. With Season 8 in full swing, give us your theory. Who is this version of Raymond Reddington? What do you got? Let us know. Take care, guys.
We'll see you next week. Until next time, I'm Agent Troy Heinrichs. That's at Troy Heinrichs on Twitter. And if you want to learn more about me, just visit, well, about.me/Troy Heinrichs.
And I'm Agent Aaron Peterson. You can hear me talking about movies and TV on the Hollywood Outsider podcast, as well as Remake This Movie Right. We are available at thehollywoodoutsider.com or on Twitter at 5Popcorn. Be sure to subscribe, download the app, submit your feedback, but most importantly, keep yourself off of
the Blacklist.
The Blacklist Exposed is a Golden Spiral Media production. Find more of our great podcasts at goldenspiralmedia.com/podcasts.
Well, they'll hear us. I'm just saying.